morning, Africa, and welcome to Daybreak Africa from the Voice of America. I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington. Today is Tuesday, January the 25th, and here are some of the stories we are covering for you this morning. The UN Secretary General strongly condemns the coup in Burkina Faso, calling on its leaders to lay down their arms, protect the president and the country's institutions.
The Secretary General is following developments in Burkina Faso with deep concern. He's particularly worried about the whereabouts and safety of President Roch-Marc Christian Kabore, as well as the worsening security situation.
That was UN spokesman Stéphane Dujarric. And the head of the World Health Organization warns that COVID-19 will be around for the foreseeable future and that everyone will have to learn to live with it.
It's dangerous to assume that Omicron will be the last variant or that we are in the end game.
And local media reports in Cameroon say that at least six soccer fans died in a stampede at Yaoundé's Olembe Stadium before the host nation's round of 16 game in the Africa Cup of Nations against Comoros. We'll have those stories and more coming up right here on Daybreak Africa. In an apparent coup in Burkina Faso, reports say mutinous soldiers have detained President Roch-Marc Christian Kabore, making it the third military takeover in West Africa in the past 18 months. For VOA, Henry Wilkins reports from Ouagadougou.
On Monday evening, a group of soldiers appeared on Burkina Faso's state broadcaster to announce that the civilian government led by Roch Kabore had been dissolved, bringing to an end his six-year rule of the country, and with it, the only period of democracy in Burkina Faso's history. The soldiers declared the country's borders were closed and the constitution was suspended. Several hours earlier, the former ruling party announced the president had survived an assassination attempt by the army and called for those participating in the coup to lay down their arms. But it was evident that the military was taking power as troops surrounded the Ouagadougou neighbourhood where the president's palace is located. Other forces seized control of broadcaster RTB.
Outside the national broadcaster RTB, soldiers are stationed around the walls of the building. They've blocked the gate with an armoured car and installed an anti-aircraft gun outside. Helicopters are circling overhead. The soldiers are from Cobra Unit, one of the special forces units which mutinied yesterday.
Around 100 to 150 pro-coup demonstrators took to the streets in the morning. Civil society groups such as the Citizens' Broom, which played a major role in the 2014 insurrection, which brought about democracy in the country, stayed silent. Abdul Aziz Kabore, a trader who was selling Burkinabe flags behind the office of the Prime Minister, voiced support for the president's ouster. Yes, we're going to support the military, he said. We agree with the coup d'etat because in our country there is no security. There is not too much security. There are soldiers who are dying, displaced people who have come here because of terrorism. However, Andrew Leibovich, an analyst with the European Council on Foreign Relations, says the coup will hurt Burkina Faso's campaign against the insurgents.
This is going to have an impact on regional counterterrorism cooperation, and I think as the junta solidifies its own control and its own authority, in the short term, it's likely that there's going to be an impact on counterterrorism efforts, which is a bit ironic given that one of the major claims or demands yesterday of the mutineers had to do with mobilizing more resources for the fight against terrorist groups.
Michael Shirkin, the director of global programs at 14 North Strategies, a Senegal and US-based consultancy, has a similar view.
What are we not going to see? We're not going to see emerging any real sense of clarity about how to move ahead. What kind of strategy does the country need in order to deal with the insurgency? That's just not going to happen. And frankly, all of this plays into the hands of the jihadist insurgents.
Burkina Faso's government has been embroiled in a six-year war with terror groups linked to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. After the coup Monday, it was not immediately clear who will take Kabore's place as the country's leader. Henry Wilkins for VOA News, Ouagadougou, Burkina Faso.
The UN Secretary-General Antonio Guterres has strongly condemned the military takeover of the government in Burkina Faso, calling on the coup leaders to lay down their arms and to ensure the protection of President Roch Kabore. UN spokesman Stéphane Dujarric.
Secretary General is following developments in Burkina Faso with deep concern. He's particularly worried about the whereabouts and safety of President Roch Marc Christian Kabore, as well as the worsening security situation following the coup carried out on January 23rd by sections of the armed forces.
Burkina Faso's army said on Monday that it had ousted President Roch Kabore, suspended the constitution, and dissolved the government and National Assembly. It also announced that it had closed the country's borders. The UN Secretary General called on the coup leaders to lay down their arms.
The Secretary General strongly condemns any attempted takeover of government by the force of arms. He calls on the coup leaders to lay down their arms and to ensure the protection of the physical integrity of the president and of the institutions of Burkina Faso.
President Kabore had faced waves of protest in recent months amid frustration over the killing of civilians and soldiers by militants, some of whom have links to Islamic State and Al-Qaeda. As of Monday, his whereabouts are still unknown. The UN Secretary General is calling for restraint amid rising fear of violence.
The Secretary General calls on all actors to exercise restraint and opt for dialogue. The United Nations reiterates its full commitment to the preservation of the constitutional order and reaffirms its support to the people of Burkina Faso in their efforts to find solutions to the multifaceted challenges facing the country.
That was UN spokesman Stéphane Dujarric speaking from the UN headquarters in New York City. The head of the World Health Organization warned Monday that COVID-19 will be around for the foreseeable future, and everyone will have to learn to live with it. The WHO chief issued the warning at the opening of the agency's week-long executive board meeting. Lisa Schlein reports for VOA from Geneva.
2 years ago, the World Health Organization declared COVID-19 a public health emergency of international concern. Then there were fewer than 100 cases and no deaths reported outside China. Those numbers now stand at nearly 350 million cases and more than 5.5 million deaths. WHO chief Tedros Adhanom Ghebreyesus says it is hard to know when the pandemic will end. However, while the coronavirus is circulating, he says it will continue to mutate in unpredictable and dangerous ways.
It's dangerous to assume that Omicron will be the last variant or that we are in the endgame. On the contrary, globally, the conditions are ideal for more variants to emerge.
Tedros says countries must learn to manage this deadly disease and use the knowledge gained to prepare for future pandemics. To change the course of the pandemic, he says the conditions driving it must change. He says the acute phase of the pandemic can be ended this year if countries use all the strategies and tools available to combat COVID-19. He adds this will work only if all countries, rich and poor alike, have equitable access to vaccines, treatments, and other tools.
Vaccines alone are not the golden ticket out of this pandemic. But there is no path out unless we achieve our shared target of vaccinating 70% of the population of every country by the middle of this year. We have a long way to go.
The WHO chief notes 86 countries have not been able to reach last year's target of vaccinating 40% of their populations. He warned the emergency phase of the pandemic will not end until the gap between the haves and have-not countries is bridged. Lisa Schlein for VOA News, Geneva.
You're listening to Daybreak Africa on the Voice of America. Local media reports in Cameroon say that at least six soccer fans died in a stampede at Yaoundé's Olembe Stadium before the host nation's round of 16 game in the Africa Cup of Nations against Comoros. The Continental Soccer Governing Body, CAF, said in a statement that it was aware of an incident at the stadium. And following a low turnout in the first round of games at the new stadiums built for AFCON 2021 tournament, Cameroon authorities have thrown open stadium gates, organized mass transportation, and given out free tickets to encourage more fans to attend the games. And still in Cameroon, separatists in the western part of the country have released 8 rubber plantation workers they abducted earlier this month. But the Anglophone rebels are still holding on to 5 government officials and a top chief they abducted months ago in Cameroon's northwest region. Moki Edwin Kinzeka reports from Yaounde.
In a video circulating on social media, scores of family members and supporters shout with joy that God has spared the lives of their relatives. Police say the video, taken at the market square in the town of Tiko, also shows 8 rubber plantation workers abducted by separatist fighters on January 15. In the video, the 8 former abductees look tired and hungry, but show no signs of physical injury. Gabriel Mbene Vefonge, president of the Cameroon Agriculture and Allied Workers Trade Union, was in the crowd welcoming back the former abductees. He says the rubber plantation workers were found in the bush on Sunday and taken to the government hospital in Tiko for medical care. He tells VOA that they were reunited with their families on Monday.
Family members generally were highly demoralized, and we keep praying that such an incident should not occur any longer. These are breadwinners who toil so that they can put bread on the table for their family members as they continue to join their families once again. We thank God for their release.
Cameroonian authorities blamed Anglophone separatists for the abduction of the 8 workers. The military said in a statement Monday that the workers have regained their freedom, but gave no further details. Fighters on social media platforms, including Facebook and WhatsApp, say the workers were released after pledging never to collaborate with Cameroonian soldiers deployed to fight the separatists. The whereabouts of 5 government officials abducted by separatists in the town of Ndian last year are still unknown. 6 government officials were abducted on June 16. One of them was found dead 2 days later. The president of the Northwest Region's House of Chiefs, an elected organ that discusses community development, also remains missing. The government said Von Kevin Shumitang was kidnapped from his palace in the town of Bambalang by separatists on December 7. Fru Angwafo, president of the Northwest Regional Assembly, a regional lawmaking body, says he is counting on the military to rescue Shumitang.
At our level, we have done the necessary contacts, and in matters of security, we can only go to the competent services that have set up the necessary inquiries and strategies to get back our Vice President of the Regional Executive Council.
Capo Daniel is Deputy Defense Chief of the Ambazonia Defense Forces, one of the separatist groups. He says fighters abducted Shumitang for collaborating with the central government in Yaounde.
His arrest was as a result of his participation in that House of Chiefs that do not represent the aspiration of our people. All members in that House of Chiefs to be subject to arrest by the Ambazonian forces for violation of Southern Cameroon territorial integrity.
Separatists in English-speaking Western Cameroon launched their rebellion in 2017 after what they said was years of discrimination by the country's French-speaking majority. The conflict has killed more than 3,000 people and displaced more than 500,000. Moki Edwin Kinzeka for VOA News, Yaounde, Cameroon.
Motorists and passengers in Uganda are concerned by a spike in the price of fuel. Local economists are warning that the situation may lead to hyperinflation unless the government intervenes. Reporter Mugume Davis Gwakarinji has more from Kampala, Uganda.
Kampala resident Anne Florence Nagai has had to cancel most of her travel plans because of transport fares that have more than doubled in recent days. Now, Nagai carries her 16-month-old baby on her back because she can't afford transport fares even for short distances.
As you can see now, I'm walking up to somewhere. I get a taxi. The baby is heavy, but I have to walk because I don't have transport because of that fuel increase. From here up to Gaba, we were going there on 1,000, but now it's 3,000. So it's affecting us.
Vincent Charimpa, motorcycle taxi driver, local known as Boda Bodas, says the hike in fuel prices is making his job more challenging.
Like now, customers cannot tell them about the fuel. They will come as usual price. So that's why we are working, but we are like not working. Like from now, from here to town, we have been taking them for 5,000, they cannot add any more money because of the other fuel. They cannot accept. Otherwise, they are like the same. Yet for us, we are not benefiting it.
The cost of a liter of petrol has risen from 4,000 Uganda shillings, or about a dollar, 6,000 Uganda shillings, or some $1.7 in the month of January within the Ugandan capital, Kampala. Dealers say the price has more than doubled to between 8,000, 10,000, or some $2.5 in upcountry locations. Fuel prices in Uganda have been on the rise since July last year after a global hike of Brent crude oil whose demand outpaced supply. For example, a barrel of crude oil increased from $50 to $86 by October, according to U.S. Energy Portal, the EIA. The problem in Uganda has recently been worsened because of delays of truck drivers that were mandated to take COVID-19 tests at Uganda's border entry with Kenya in the eastern part of the country. The delays led to long queues and at times shortage of fuel at some gas stations. Patrick Katabazi-Choncho, an economist in Uganda, says the government should plan better. He says a shortage in fuel leads to higher prices, which affect an ordinary person.
We see many asymmetries in markets. For example, you can have a surplus of a food item in Kabale, but famine or shortage of food elsewhere, like in Karamoja, largely because of the fact that markets are not interconnected. So it is constraining trade as we speak, and that means people are going to lose jobs. That means that it is going to contribute to the general increase in the price level.
Solomon Muita, the spokesperson of Uganda's Minister of Energy and Petroleum, says the government is well aware of the problem. He says the ministry has dispatched a team of health personnel at the border to test and clear the drivers.
The condition is almost clearing. I think by the end of the week, we should not have a congestion at the borders, Busia and Malaba. Two, government has plans to put up sizable reserves or storage tanks in the country.
Muita says the government is planning to construct fuel reserves that can keep out 300 million liters of fuel, which can be used during such emergencies. For VOA News, I am Mugume Davis Rakarinji in Kampala, Uganda.
Two Zambian NGOs have petitioned the Africa Commission on Human and People's Rights, complaining that there is a lack of diversity in the appointments to public institutions in the Southern African country. The Chapter One Foundation and group Young Women in Action jointly argue that the Constitution demands that appointments to public institutions must meet a 50% threshold of each gender, as well as the equitable representation of youth and persons with disabilities. The group says that only 4 women out of the total of 24 have been appointed to cabinet positions in the current government. They argue that the lack of diversity violates the Constitution and is a departure from the country's obligations to the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, as well as the Maputo Protocol. Linda Kasonde is the executive director of the Chapter One Foundation. She's also the former president of the Law Association of Zambia. She tells VOA's Peter Cloti that the groups want the Zambian government to respect the Constitution and its obligations to international treaties regarding diversity in staff appointments.
So Zambia has ratified the African Charter on Human and People's Rights, as well as the Maputo Protocol under the Charter. And both those treaties basically prescribe that governments should try as much as possible to ensure that there's non-discrimination with regards to people's participation in public life, with specific reference to women, youth, and disabled persons. So we filed our complaints, and we wait to hear from the commission as to the way forward.
Some people are suggesting that this is a mere publicity stunt just to make your group and the Young Women in Action group to be relevant, because a lot of women have been appointed into public positions in Zambia, including the vice president being a female. How do you respond to that?
Well, my first response is we are relevant. And we're relevant because we're taking up causes that advance the rights and liberties of the Zambian people. For example, in the previous cabinet, out of a total number of 30 cabinet members, only 9 were women. And none of the provincial ministers, and there's a good, I think it's 10 provincial ministers, none of those were women. None of those were youth or disabled people. And the situation, as we described in our press briefing today, has deteriorated under the current government.
Linda, what do you say to those who are of the opinion that you are embarrassing Zambia in the eyes of the international community by dragging the government in the mud to petition the African Commission on Human and People's Rights on the lack of diversity in appointing to the public offices in Zambia?
I think it shouldn't be taken as a personal attack for any one government. Successive governments have failed to provide adequate gender parity or representation of youth and disabled persons. As I mentioned, we started this case when the previous dispensation was in office. And as I mentioned earlier, the situation has actually deteriorated.
So what is the end game here? Because some people are saying that governments have routinely ignored their ruling or decisions when they make them.
Well, our ultimate aim is to have the commission agree with us that, in fact, Zambia is not complying with its treaty obligations under the African Charter on Human and People's Rights and also under the Maputo Protocol, which I mentioned earlier, provide for non-discrimination and allowing for public participation of all people in a particular jurisdiction. This new government has repeatedly told the people of Zambia that it is a government that respects the rule of law. So we are yet to see if indeed the commission agrees with us that Zambia is not complying with its treaty obligations. We're yet to see whether the government will indeed uphold the rule of law and respect and honor the treaty obligations which it has ratified.
That is the executive director of the Chapter One Foundation, Linda Kasonde. She was speaking to VOA's Peter Cloti from Lusaka, Zambia. And that's it for this edition of Daybreak Africa. Thank you for spending this morning with us. For more African news and features, remember to visit our website at voanews.com. You can also connect with us on all social media platforms. We are on Twitter, Instagram, Facebook, and YouTube. Just search for VOA Africa. Until next time, I'm Jackson Vunganyi in Washington, wishing you a very good morning, Africa.
Hello, Africa. This is Peter Cloti, host of VOA's Africa Weekend show, Nightline Africa. Tune in. You will be glad you did.
Nightline Africa is a fast-paced, tightly edited news show designed to keep our listeners engaged from beginning to end. Nightline comes to you live from the Voice of America on the following shortwave frequencies: 6080 kilohertz, 49.3 meter band, and 15580 kilohertz, 19.2 meter band.
VOA brings you the best in African music on the African beat. African Beat showcases the latest and the greatest of contemporary African music, from bobo music to hip life, bongo flavor to soukous, Afrobeat to ndombolo, and makossa to kwaito. The African Beat on VOA has it all. and it's happening right here. Mondays through Fridays at 09:05 and 20:05 UTC, right after the international news.